Dave Hodgson, The Daily. Movies Are New comes to you courtesy of Cines Afacini in Mallorca, Ibiza and Menorca. Latest releases in English at afacini.com.
Maybe I should be playing this. That's a great theme, of course, but maybe I should be playing this one today. Here we go. Two great themes there, Richard, hey?
Indeed, yes, no doubt about it, and a tribute, I think, rather a nice touch you paid that, to top British filmmaker and director of 40 films, Lewis Gilbert, who's just died.
How many Bond films was he part of?
One with Sean Connery, You Only Live Twice, and two with Roger Moore, The Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker. He said that he'd injected what he called a certain sense of humour into Bond. I have to say they were not my personal favourites,
no.
And indeed the character Jaws most emphatically wasn't my idea of a good villain, but they were enormously successful at the box office.
And of course, I mean, my age, I mean, I grew up on the Bond of the 80s, Roger Moore, and yes, there was this comical side to Bond, I suppose, which I suppose I feel that the new incarnation is probably more similar to the original 60s with Sean Connery, Daniel Craig, of course, but it's an interesting one there, yes, but another films he's been doing as well, not just the Bond films.
Well, firstly, I agree with you totally about the movies, the Bond movies now, and their links with Connery. But there's no doubt, I think, his reputation as a serious top filmmaker rests on, firstly, what has been called the working class trilogy, Alfie educating Rita and Shirley Valentine.
Brilliant.
Very quirky movies, very quintessentially British films, with top-class performances. Alfie, of course, starring Michael Caine, unforgettably, as the Cockney Lothario, without much of a heart, and no question that educating Rita with Julie Walters and also, of course, Michael Caine, great success, and Shirley Valentine. Again, another marvellous movie about with a bored housewife wanting to escape with Pauline Collins.
Yes, I remember that well, yes. So sad loss then to the film world there, Lewis Gilbert, who passed away.
And just to mention Sink the Bismarck, a favourite of mine, he did three wartime movies, Carve Her Name with Pride, Reach for the Sky. My mother worked in the Admiralty during the war, and when very young, I was taken to see Sink the Bismarck and absolutely loved it.
Okay, we're going to look at a British movie in a moment as well, but before we do that, let's just talk Oscars for a few moments.
Indeed, and I think we know who's going to win almost all the major categories, but the big surprise is still the nail biter for Best Picture. I mean, I was talking on air to someone, a filmmaker in Hollywood, this morning, who said that The Shape of Water, though it's got 30 nominations and 3 billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri, with 7, nonetheless, it's not the numbers that count. It's absolutely neck and neck. The reason that it's thought that Shape of Water will possibly win, or probably win, is because Guillermo del Toro has an acting, directing nomination, and unfortunately, Martin McDonagh didn't get one for 3 billboards, which is certainly strange.
But like you say, it's probably, would you say it's more predictable than ever this year? Or it just seems to me that we've got most of the bases covered already.
Oh, I think we have. If anyone other than Gary Oldman won Best Actor, Frances McDormand Best Actress for 3 billboards, and obviously we've got Alison Janney as the monster mother in I, Tonya, but the ice skater Tonya Harding, and Sam Rockwell for 3 billboards is going to win Best Supporting Actor. These are all, I'd say, absolute certainties, and I think Guillermo del Toro for the fantasy movie is very imaginative, and it has a homage to movies within it as well, which I think will please Hollywood and The Shape of Water. And whether, you know, you're going to get, for makeup, you're going to get Darkest Hour, for animation, you're going to get Coco. And there is no question, though, Best Picture, still, there's a question mark about. And only 2 films, Argo and The Rising Miss Daisy, have not won Best Picture without a nomination for Best Director. So the odds, I suppose, if you look at it like that, are slightly in favour of Shape of Water, but I'm told it's terribly close, and a lot of dirty campaigning going on, because the accusations of plagiarism against Shape of Water and racism in the script of 3 billboards. This is fine old Hollywood fun and games, but it all adds to a very, very tense result for Best Picture, because, of course, they've got this extraordinary alternative votes system of voting.
Okay, well, it's going to be interesting as well, just a few days to go. So, a very exciting time in the film world at the moment. And Jimmy Kimmel, is it, I think, presenting?
Yes, he is indeed. He's back again after last year. He can't be blamed. No. It was not he who had anything to do with the fateful La La Land
omnibus. Oh, let's hope we don't see that again. It was cringy to watch, wasn't
it? We will never, never see it again. what does one say about it? It really was
surreal. Yeah, absolutely. Just a brief mention as well. You probably saw this yesterday or the day before yesterday. It was, of course, Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, William and Kate, talking about their charity work and taking some questions, and seemed very relaxed. And I suppose what I like about them is they are kind of chilled out, I suppose, royals, aren't they, in many ways, kind of bringing the royal family a little bit up to date, and keeping that popularity there. They seem to be very popular at the moment, these guys.
Oh, you're terribly right, because this is precisely what they're doing, whereas in the past, members of the royal family, they'd be patrons of organisations, but perhaps remain, aloof from day-to-day running, so to speak. The Princess of Wales, Diana, of course, was an exception. Mm. She'd touch and she'd hug and so forth, but here, I thought it was a triumph what I saw, because Meghan made it absolutely clear, and this links with the movies, of course, too, that the Me Too and Time's Up campaigns, which of course began with the entertainment industry but are about women's rights and feminism and equal pay and equality generally in all fields, that she wants to shine the spotlight on them, and she certainly can't wait to, quote, hit the ground running.
I think she's done that already.
Hasn't married yet, but it's just a couple of months. And the Royal Foundation of the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge and Prince Harry, which Meghan will be joining, this does tremendously good work, heads together, which is helping so many in the field of mental illness, where there was no possibility of them having any assistance before. Invictus Games, of course, which have been an absolute triumph for Harry, and in a variety of fields, whether it's cyberbullying, choosing something unusual, but choosing something that can really help people. And yes, you're absolutely right. The image is so different from many royals of the past. They're not aloof. They're really incredibly powerful, probably the world's top dynamic charitable foursome.
And you got a busy time coming up, Richard. You got the Oscars coming up, and of course you got a royal wedding and a royal baby on the way. So no rest for you this year.
None. No, the wicked. Absolutely no rest at all. It's lovely for me.
Let's talk British movies, as we've already mentioned. And Dark River is the one, one of the ones we're looking at today. And am I right in saying this is set in rural northern county? Is it Yorkshire Way? Maybe.
Yes, and it's also one of a series of movies that also. God's Own Country was set in a farm. There are not that number of rural movies, and this one, it's by director Cleo Barnard. She did Arbor, about the Bradford poet Andrea Dunbar, a very unusual told story, and also the much praised Selfish Giant, which was so joyous. This has a toughness and a rawness about this film, and be warned, it's stuffed and very, very tough viewing. Where Ruth Wilson, a superb actress, plays Alice, a sheep shearer who returns to the farm she believes she's inherited in the death of her father, and she finds that it's becoming a ruin because of the mismanagement of her brother Joe, played by Mark Stanley, who wants a loan to develop it, but is totally useless. And this reminds her of hideous times in her past, which we see in flashback. Very good performances by those playing the young Alice and the young Joe, and Sean Bean is her father. This is a really tough movie, and there's no question whatsoever that characters such as Joe, so ferocious, so bad-tempered, so violent, with his deep resentment of her sister, she left him with their father when he was ill, but on the other hand, what memories does she have of him, and who will claim the farm, and why, and how will this sort of fierce sibling rivalry end? Very, very powerful performances in this film. Ruth Wilson's superb. I thought Mark Stanley is excellent. There's an amazing twist at the end. Some haven't been convinced by it, but I thought that it was remarkably well done, very well filmed, and it's very dramatic, and it held me throughout.
Oh, good stuff, and good stuff. It looks like a very an atmospheric film, I think. It was something that came to mind as I was watching the clips of it there. Ratings out of five or not, Richard?
Well, I'm going to five because I was so involved in it. I thought it was excellent.
Good stuff. Okay, well, watch that one as well. Great British film there. And I'm hoping you're going to say nice things about this next one. It's a sort of film that I'd like to watch. It's Red Sparrow. It's the new Jennifer Lawrence film.
Yes, it is indeed. It's the sort of film I thought I would like to watch.
Oh, don't tell me that.
I'm sorry to say that the reverse is true. I mean, there are fiendish scenes of torture in this film. There's tons of violence and there's plenty of nudity.
That's not the reason I wanted to watch it, by the way.
I dare say it isn't, but I've got absolutely got to mention it, because this movie, it's sensational on most of its story, frankly, and this is the problem. It simply isn't believable.
Right.
I mean, it's a feature of the espionage genre that the plots are often fantastic. Mm. Heaven knows this has got more twists than most of them, but all the glossy visuals and eerie music simply can't make up for a credibility gap, and it gets ever wider, and it means you've ceased to care for the main protagonist, who's Jennifer Lawrence.
This is an issue. I mean, we've had this conversation in our house because my wife's a lot better at suspending intelligence when it comes to watching movies. For me, you've got to kind of say, you know, there's certain films where, yes, they are going to be far-fetched, but you know you're going to expect that. But you shouldn't really be expecting it in a film like this so much.
Well, you know, and the movie must, if it's, unless it's a spoof, which this certainly isn't, it must either draw you in or it must involve you.
Yeah.
If you start feeling skeptical and think, why on earth is such a person doing this, and the scene's just been set up, and my goodness, they wouldn't do that. I mean, early in the film, we meet Dominika Egorova, played by Jennifer Lawrence. She's a ballerina devoted to her ailing mother. While dancing with the famed Bolshoi, she has a frightful accident that ruins her dancing career and places her in the hands of her ruthless uncle Ivan, who's in Russian intelligence, played by Matthias Schoonhartz. He sends her to a state-run school for for spies who specialise in sexual entrapment, and she goes to Hungary and London, and the plot deals with Russian intelligence's search for the identity of a mole at the highest levels of the Kremlin. Enter American agent Nate Nash, played by Joel Edgerton, who escapes from Russia at the rather tense, I have to say, beginning of the film, and is reassigned to the case, and hopes to turn Dominica against her masters and has an affair with her. All of that could have been extremely entertaining and very tense, and it simply isn't. And one example is that she murders two prominent members of the Bolshoi, a brutal double murder at the beginning, and it's simply ignored in the plot of the movie. What's held over her by Russian intelligence, so our uncle can control her, is that a prominent figure who she's been set up with is strangled. This is a movie which has Jennifer Lawrence doing her best to convey a resilience abused by a ruthless system, but even she cannot carry off a plot as silly as this. And there's so many characters played by Kieran Hines and Jeremy Irons, Russian intelligence officers, very, very heavily accented, which can be a bit fake. They could have had subtitles. And Charlotte Rampling is absolutely hilarious as Matron, who is a monster who runs the school for seduction where they produce the Red Sparrow agents of the title. So you could have found a lot of this in a comic book. The director of Hunger Games is Francis Lawrence. He's lost his way.
It's a shame because they're hyping it like nobody's business, aren't they? And it's, you know, and in many, it's a film genre that a lot of people look forward to, you know, maybe the kind of Bourne Identity type of film that you want to watch. So it's a shame. I had a feeling you were going to find a few issues with it, it's one of those ones. The film's got to be believable, Richard, hasn't it? To a degree, I mean, there is some poetic license, you know, that you allow.
Sure, but you have to. If something's contrived and if it's confused, all the prodigious amounts of talent and big names will not make it convincing. It's got. If it isn't intending to be a spoof or some sort of send-up, it ought at least to have either believable, mostly believable, or alternatively be, well, okay, occasionally sometimes it's unbelievable, but fascinating. This just simply is so much in-your-face sensation. That's why there's been so much fuss about it, the torture, the violence, the nudity, all of that. And it would have been in context perfectly all right had the movie been good.
Yeah, there we go. So, out of five, I think it's going to be a low one, Richard.
Well, I'm very sorry about this, but having made my apologies, all I can say is that it's going to be 2 out of 5, and the 2 stars, frankly, are for Jennifer Lawrence's efforts. I mean, it's okay visually. Yeah. It's not an absolutely terrible movie, but this is the sort of movie that could have been really exciting, and most emphatically, certainly for me, it wasn't.
What are other critics saying similar things to you over this, do you find?
It's had a mixed reception, at least from what I can see. Mixed, meaning that some have found it, or found her, rather good, but I think the consensus is that the plot, as I've been saying, is not very convincing.
Well, she's certainly Hollywood's golden girl at the moment, isn't she?
Oh, that's for sure. There's no doubt about that, and I mean, she's acts in, shall we say, some extraordinary scenes.
Well, Richard, what are we going to have next week, then? What can we expect?
Next week, we're looking for Bombshell, which is a very surprising movie. The story of Hedy Lamarr, and we also catch up with the latest Denzel Washington movie, as well as report, of course, on The Greatest Show on Earth, the Oscars.
Lovely, great stuff, Richard. We'll look forward to getting the full update from you on that, and have a great weekend, and enjoy the Oscars.
I certainly shall.
Thank you, Richard. Richard Fitzwilliams there. You can find him online as well, of course.